Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2014 movie Edge of Tomorrow. Now, this is the first movie we're doing during Clocktober, which is our first in an annual selection of movies for the month of October that deal with time travel.
Eric got to see this, but brother Drew fell offline and restarted. So just so Drew has full disclosure, he can see my notes for the movie.
Nice. They look like mine.
Yeah, they look like Eric's apparently, yeah, too.
Also look like mine, too. None of us took any notes for this movie. Yeah. You know why? I'll say it.
Because it's Groundhog Day 2, Alien Invasion.
This was a fantastic movie that I just wanted to sit back and enjoy. How did I miss this movie for so long?
Everyone did, because it has the worst title this side of Terriers.
Yes, well, and the poster led you to believe that the title was Live, Die, Repeat, but apparently that was only a tagline.
I think those weren't even the original posters.
Yeah, I think so.
Live, Die, Repeat would have been a better title.
Yeah, because, of course, Edge of Tomorrow has nothing to do with anything.
Yeah, it means nothing. What the book is called All You Need Is Kill, right?
Yes, it's a manga.
I love that title.
Also, apparently it has a very different ending, and also beginning and middle.
Oh, so it's very similar, except where it's not.
But that's okay. This movie is all for fun. So whose list was this on? This is on Drew's list, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, Drew, take us away. How did you discover this movie, and what do you think?
I saw this movie when it first came out on video. I mean, I'll pretty much give anything Tom Cruise is in a shot. And I didn't really know anything about this movie. It had a lot of fun people in the credits. It turns out they're not really in the movie that much. You know, Brendan Gleeson, Bill Paxton.
The late Bill Paxton.
Yes. So it was fun to see him. But yeah, so I watched it. Did this come out after Oblivion or before? I don't know. It was right around the same time. And I thought Oblivion was terrible.
I didn't think Oblivion was terrible.
I thought it was so boring. But then this was on the opposite spectrum. It went 100 miles an hour, I thought. It established the premise really well, and I thought it was really enjoyable. Emily Blunt was great in a role I'd never seen her in before. Yeah, I really liked it. It was surprising. I liked all the alien character design. The movie looked great. It moved. I thought it was quite enjoyable. So I forget whose idea it was to do time travel movies for October, but I thought that was a great opportunity to sit down and talk about this movie.
And you're welcome.
Oblivion was 1 year before this.
Okay, yeah. So I think it got kind of buried.
So Drew, you're the only one who doesn't know this, I think, at the moment, because Jason's looking online as well. But if you had to guess, how many acting credits does Tom Cruise have?
52.
You are incredibly close.
Oh, I was going to say it was higher than that.
Oh, so you're not looking at it, Jason?
Mm-mm.
What would your guess be, knowing that it's incredibly close?
I would have said like 120, but that's before you said incredibly close. Then I would have said 55.
Yeah. How about 46?
That number seems low.
How about he has been a producer in almost half as many movies as he's been an actor?
Oh.
I mean, granted, that has to do with the fact that he made a lot of money in his first several movies. Or, not first several, but he got real big, real fast. Around Risky Business.
He was Fast and Furious.
That's a lot of credits, considering he is almost always the main star.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. No, he definitely has a depth of filmography, just not a breadth. I don't know. I'm a little punchy. This has been a really busy month and a really busy week in the month. And so I've got to go to a mandatory training class tomorrow called What If It Were Your Family? To teach us to be nicer to our customers.
Is that really the title of the training class?
Yep. And it's funny. Everybody likes the trainer. In fact, I've had the trainer before, like 12 years ago. But everybody likes the trainer. And he's been called, oh, he reminds me of Louis Anderson. Or,
oh, dear.
Or, hey, he reminds me of you.
Like, oh, that's like, unfortunate.
Jesus Christ. Okay. All right. Newman, fuck you. Anyway, anyway. Yeah, I trained up for this role. So, Brother Jay, you'd never seen this movie before?
I had never seen this movie before.
And what was your reaction?
It was okay. I had some problems at the beginning of the movie because the repetition was really starting to grate on my nerves. They tried to make it a little bit funny at times, which was made it clownish. And I actually thought it would have been, if they would have just stuck with one, if they would have kept it serious, I would have enjoyed it more. But them trying to make it funny, just it detracted from the seriousness of the situation. So, I don't know. So that got me. Also, the fact that the aliens are very much like I just forgot their name. The stupid things from The Matrix. Aliens were very much like the creatures, the little technology octopuses that were coming after all of them in The Matrix movies.
I was also thinking of the movie, was it Battle for LA and Skyscraper? Not Skyscraper. Skyline?
I never saw those. So.
The CGI guys from Battle for Los Angeles, like, spun off and on their time, using the equipment from Battle of Los Angeles, made their own movie.
The sets were good. I thought the technical effects were really good. I really dug the animatronics and the technology gear that they had, the military hardware. That was interesting. And some of the combat fights were interesting. But I think... Bill Paxton's crazy, silly grin really got on my nerves. And then I just some little things I just really annoying. But I appreciated the fact that they changed camera angles when they would change days sometimes. You would see different points of view sometimes, but you would see some of the similar repetition sometimes. So I didn't hate it. It was probably, it was okay.
Yeah, I think it needed levity though, because if it didn't have those lighter moments, you would really get sort of drawn into the horror of what it must be like to not only live the same day or couple of days over and over again, but like a really horrific, traumatic couple of days over and over again.
Well, it wasn't a couple of days, though. I mean, potentially, this was hundreds, if not thousands of days.
Well, yeah, hundreds or thousands of cycles, but the same couple of days.
Yeah, so I don't know. I would have preferred it darker. I think that's, for my preference, the levity to me took me out of the movie. Because it made it like this, wah, wah, like, oh, no, don't shoot me in the head. Nah, you know, it's just, it to me, it broke the continuity. Like making jokes about killing somebody.
Okay, let me dive in here. So the plot is pretty simple, and I can sum it up in just a couple of thoughts, I think. Is that, you know, the main character is Tom Cruise, who plays this PR guy for the military. And, oh yeah, there's an alien invasion that they start in Europe and are taking over. And there's no way to defeat them. So the world governments are combined to put all this military force to try to d- defeat these alien creatures.
And what did France ever do?
And Tom Cruise is strictly a PR guy, and he's good at it. But he's also being enlisted or recruited or ordered, just frankly, by the general of the United Defense Force or whatever it's called, who is in Bruges, Brendan Gleeson. So he ends up like being put on the front line, embedded with combat troops on D-Day, basically. And he is sort of shanghaied, and he wakes up, and he's handcuffed, and he gets introduced to his new crew, and they fit him with this exoskeleton fancy armor that allows people to be either drafted or volunteers right off the street and going in combat the next day with minimal training. Which sounds like a horrible idea as cannon fodder. And the other people, actually, I was really impressed by the other actors in his little group. They had, you know, it was the same lines over and over, but they were pretty funny. And it was standard military sort of stuff. I mean, I've never been in the military, but I know paramilitary people and people who used to be in the military. And I think Bill Paxton's character rings fairly true. You've got a leader who's a big personality and has his shtick down. But anyway, and also doesn't, you know, like treats people like crap. So Tom Cruise ends up getting dumped into D-Day, and it's all very exciting and special effects, and it's not quite Saving Private Ryan, but it's that frenetic, that's for sure. That complicated. I'm sure it looked great on the big screen. Or maybe not. Maybe it was too much on the big screen. Hard to tell. I watch things on a very little screen, usually. Anywho. Blah, blah, blah. Science fiction. He ends up stuck in a time loop where if he dies, he just resets to that time where he woke up and has to repeat the whole day again. So, much like Groundhog Day. I mean, basically this is, I think, on the page, like the elevator pitch for this movie to the producers was literally Groundhog Day, Starship Troopers. And that's, you know, so we're killing bugs and we're doing it every day. And Tom Cruise's character starts out as, you know, like freaked out, unprepared, whatever. And then as the days go along, he's got a little grasp of how he can make this work for him. And so he, you know, much like Bill Murray, he gets better at using these days. Or it's kind of like akin to a video game where if, you know, if you're, if there's a particularly difficult game, you'll repeat the same level or whatever over and over and over and over and over because you have to get the moves just right. So He treats it like such. And so, but you know, toward the middle of it, he's like, okay, I step here, I step here, I step here, and whoops, crash, start over again. You know, it's like learning a dance. But also involved in this, I will go back to what the IMDb page, because literally I don't have any notes. We have Emily Blunt, who's the Angel of Verdun, and she's great.
Full metal bitch, as the graffiti says every time he wakes up.
And they don't explain it in the movie, but they explain it in the manga. Is that how you pronounce it?
Sure.
That she uses what looks kind of like a helicopter prop / sword. And the reason why she uses those kind of like melee weapons is because you learn... also a gaming thing. You learn you use the hand-to-hand combat weapons because you don't have to reload or find ammo.
Hmm.
So that's why she has a big sword. It's not just to look cool.
It is very video gamey.
Much, much more exhausting, though.
Yeah, perhaps.
When you got your exoskeleton suit doing all the work, right?
Yeah, there we go.
I suppose. That's good. That's a fair point. Until it runs out of batteries.
So then you have... Bill Paxton, who's the master sergeant. The general is Brendan Gleeson. We've got other members of the crew, including Charlotte Riley, Nance, who has this like Kentucky accent. Do you know who she's married to?
I don't even know who she is.
You know who she is in the movie, right? The character?
Yeah.
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 She's kind of got
she's a little
bit.
She's pretty gross.
Yeah, she's got like a little bit of... If Nancy McKeon from Facts of Life ran a meth lab, She's really a lovely English actress who is married to Tom Hardy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, they worked together on Wuthering Heights.
So they all do like fucked up voice things.
Yeah.
So they're all so she was the only female in the J crew, right?
Yeah.
Oh man, they must be insufferable when they're both preparing for roles.
I'm sure there's a joke about her being a beard anyway. But anyway, the acting family must be worse. The worst.
Are you intimating that Tom Hardy is perhaps the gay?
Well, that's just...
Yeah, is that a rumor?
I think so.
I think the gays would love that to be true, but I highly doubt that's the case. You think him and Mr. Franco are humping it out somewhere?
Hold on, Alexa's trying to find out if Tom Hardy's gay, all on her own, from the other room. But I turned Alexa off from the internet, so she told me she's not hooked up. No, I'm trying to think of where I heard. I think it's probably because maybe he doesn't answer questions about his sexuality, which is fair enough. I mean, they're stupid questions to ask a celebrity, right?
Yeah, it's ostensibly nobody's business. It doesn't impact his acting ability.
Yeah, and that's kind of what he has said, which, so people say, well, that means he's a poof.
Yeah.
I don't know if they say he's a poof. I don't even know if they pronounce it right. Anyway.
So back to an actor who is very definitely not gay, Tom Cruise.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 Super not gay, Tom Cruise.
Yes.
Yeah.
The only one less super not gay than him is John Travolta.
Yes.
None of our business, of course. We'd love them.
No, what do I care?
Yeah.
I don't care what teams they bat for. They're fine acting. I don't care.
Exactly. And the movie also starred Aaron Burnett.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. That was nice.
Who's Aaron Burnett?
CNN correspondent out front with Aaron Burnett.
Okay. Yep.
She's actually a very nice presence.
Oh, yeah. She's great. Anyway, so blah, blah, blah. Science fiction. Shooty. I thought you needed... the fact that he dies every day, and it's made clear in the beginning that not only does he die every day and have to redo this thing, basically until he gets it right. He's got... Because they give this scientific or this sci-fi explanation about how he killed an alpha, and that's why he does the time loop, and how he's got to go kill the omega, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. Reasons. So they have to finish the level and kill the boss on the end of the level, right? But to get that far, he's got to do all this crazy stuff. And Emily Blunt tells him, oh, yeah, she used to have this time loop thing, but she lost it because instead of dying at the end of the day, she actually got a transfusion. And the transfusion meant she didn't die, which meant she lost the ability to do this repeating thing. And I'm sure if you've been dying every day for 300 or 2,000 days or whatever, you're kind of used to, you're living large, like, you know, if I fall into a manhole and die, it's fine. No big deal. I'll wake up and I'll start this whole thing over again. Although, I don't know, maybe would you schedule more naps? Would you be tired? I don't know. Maybe as tired as you were to begin with?
We can discuss all these existential impacts of time loops and time travel when we do 4 weeks of Primer next year.
Yes. Yes. Actually, we'll do a Primer Minute all of next year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We could go through the whole year, a minute of Primer every year.
I think it would only take us like, 2.5 months?
Yeah. And it would be, it'd be like, huh, these guys, they're this washed out scene, they're wearing white shirts. They're kind of in a warehouse. There's no real, box.
I have no idea. Okay. I have no idea what they said this entire minute.
Exactly. Yeah. No, there was no language this minute. It's not a Saulnier movie. Saulnier? Is that what his name is?
Yes.
Okay. We'll talk about that later, too. So.
I still haven't seen it.
Jason, did you see it?
Which one?
Hold the Dark.
I don't think so. It's the one
about Alaska that...
Oh, yeah. It's in my list.
Okay. I recommend seeing it. I watched it right away.
I haven't... I couldn't figure out what I wanted to watch earlier this week, and I wasn't ready to watch this movie. So what did I watch? that I noticed was on Netflix.
What'd
or Hulu or something. One of my streaming services. Sneakers.
Oh, of course. Well, it's funny. When Drew... Well, this might as well tangent all the way here. Okay, so Drew discovered a movie on Netflix streaming called Hold the Dark, directed by one of our favorite new directors, Saulnier. I forget his first name.
Jeremy.
Jeremy Saulnier. Who with his buddy...
Saulnier? Saulnier?
What's his name? Macon Blair? Macon Blair, yes. Who did Blue Ruin.
You've really done your prep work, it seems.
and then of course, his next movie is Green Room, which is fantastic. And then this movie, Hold the Dark, which takes place in Alaska.
Have you seen Green Room, Jason?
Mm-mm.
Oh, that's a good one. We should put that on the list. It's not time travel.
Are you a Patrick Stewart fan?
I'm a very big Patrick Stewart fan.
You got to watch it.
This movie's for you.
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
No, you'll like it. Anyway, so Drew, you mentioned this, and you talked to Dad about it. Is that right?
Yeah.
So, did Dad ever watch it?
Because Dad is the one who asked to watch Blue Ruin,
yes.
Which we were all scratching our heads about when we watched it.
Yeah.
But it was good. I liked it. Yeah, he said it had popped up in his recommendations too, but he had no idea what it was. When I told him it was by the same dude who did, you know, that one movie with the guy with the beard, he was like, "Oh yeah, that was a weird movie."
Well, let me tell you, and I don't want to give anything away, but it's got a great cast. It's got Jeffrey Wright and Alexander Skarsgård. I forget, because there's a Sarsgaard and then a Skarsgård.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is the Skarsgård.
Are you sure?
I am not. It could be a Dorf. Anyway, so...
Ebert.
That movie, I'll just say that I don't understand it. I don't understand how it ended. I don't understand a lot about the movie. I thought it was arresting. It was beautiful, but I don't understand it.
Okay. Well, I will endeavor to watch it this weekend.
Does it look like it was filmed in Alaska?
Yeah, more or less. I mean, there's some little Alaska things that bother me that I'll let you guys find out on your own. But it holds it. It's been compared to Insomnia. It's frankly not as good a movie as Insomnia. But it's probably better Alaskan movie than Insomnia is.
Okay, that's good. That's all I want.
Yeah. There's some geographic things that they patch over because they don't. Alaska's such a big place. You got to be careful. It's like if we did a movie in Scotland, like Scotland's a bigger place than you would think of because all you think of is like three things in Scotland. But there's a lot of stuff in between. Well,
look, there's a mossy hill and then a lake. We'll call it a loch. It'll be fine.
Exactly. And
Scotland.
Some weirdo, hairy, bighorn cows. So I was on my own little time travel trip, going back, thinking about my week and realizing that, oh, hey, I have a little extra time, so I can watch a movie. When Drew mentioned Hold the Dark, I thought, oh, I can watch a movie for fun. And then I watched that movie and I thought, well, this wasn't exactly fun. So I watched Jennifer Lopez movie, The Cell.
Oh, God.
You thought that was fun?
Well, it's also a Vincent D'Onofrio movie and a
Vince Vaughn
movie, yeah. And it is also, it's actually more beautiful than Hold the Dark. It is a beautiful, beautiful movie. And Jennifer Lopez, and I had to look at her IMDb to check. This is not her second movie or first movie or third movie. This is like well into her acting. And she is not good. She drags down every scene she's in. And it's a hokey premise, but it's beautiful. And if she's not talking, it's fine. But for some reason, they just got her in a wooden moment.
Her in that movie, opposite Vincent D'Onofrio, reminds me of watching Keanu Reeves opposite John Malkovich in Dangerous Liaisons.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yes. So... that wasn't exactly fun. And then, of course, this was the homework movie, which I enjoyed greatly. But it is interesting that when you watch a movie that you know is on the list, it's like it's homework. It's never going to be entirely fun to sit down and watch it for the podcast, I don't think, is it? It's a different experience. Do you get a sense of dread as it's coming closer, as it looms? Do you think, no, oh, no, I've got to watch this movie?
I'm actually usually really excited to watch it, whether I like the movie or not, because then I get to chat about it, which is quite enjoyable.
Excellent. Cool. Me too, for the most part.
No, you just said it wasn't.
No, I'm trying to elicit some sort of conversation out of Jason, who is not having it. He needs to be reminded this is a audio podcast where he needs to contribute in a audible manner.
I don't like to interrupt.
If you didn't interrupt, you guys would never talk. Because I won't stop talking.
Well, we're well aware of that fact. No, with few exceptions, I enjoy watching the movies myself as well. Because it sometimes gives me an exposure to a movie I might not normally have watched. Because this probably would not have come up in my queue. So it was worth watching. Other times I curse you repeatedly at saddling me with this dreck of a movie that I have to slog through. So there are times where I will take either or both of your names in vain. But for the most part, it's positive and uplifting. So, and it's certainly illuminating and either further cements my disdain of certain actors and or filmmakers, or maybe perhaps exposes me to different avenues of movies I hadn't thought of. So.
Yeah, excellent. Me too. Did boyfriend Jesse watch the movie and did he like it?
He watched it and I don't remember what he said. I don't think he hated it. I'll have to get back to you on that.
Okay. So, housekeeping? Okay, not quite.
Is that really all you want to talk about this movie?
Well, I have a question about the end. I mean, really, it's a fun movie because, I guess I was going in this direction too. I think, Drew, you're right. You needed the comedy of the whole thing. The fact that he gets, you know, he has to die every time, and the fact that she knows she's got to kill him all the time, and she just pulls out the gun and shoots him in the head, even when he's like, wait, and then she shoots him. I think that's actually pretty hilarious because it's taking a little bit of tension off of what could be a super tense period.
And I similar to Looper, the movie Looper, I like the way they sort of address the nonsense of time travel in this movie. They throw out an idea and then they just yada yada everything else after it. But also they don't harp on, and this is very similar to Groundhog Day, they don't harp on how many times he's been through the loop, but you just understand that through context.
Yes.
You know, as the movie progresses and you get further and further along in the story, he never explicitly says how many times he's done it before. Because sometimes he doesn't want to admit that he's done it before because he's trying to elicit a different reaction. And occasionally they'll actually break off and he'll just be like, fuck it, I don't want to do this anymore. So, you know, one time he went AWOL and went into London to a pub. And he got to witness what would actually happen later that day after their invasion failed and they lost. So I actually really appreciated the way they addressed that.
Yeah.
We never find out how many times he went through the loop.
No. No, and we only have a rough idea how many times she went through the loop. Like 300 something?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I thought all of that was great. And you're right. They just touched on the little things. They say, here's the setting. Just go with us. We're going to lead you real fast through this whole mission. You're just going to take our word for it that it all works out. Although, I did have a question about the end.
Yeah, boyfriend Jesse liked the movie, he says.
So. Oh, okay. So it's a tepid response. Was it, I like it? Or was it, I liked it?
Or, no, he liked it. I would say it was more than tepid.
Okay.
I suspect he liked it more than I did. So.
Okay.
But so what is your question about the ending? Not that I'm going to be able to illuminate your question, but.
Well, okay. So the ending is fun and it's a very comic book type of ending or whatever. He finally defeats the whole, he realizes that he and Emily go through these stages where And we find out toward the end that he's done this thing and he can't get her past a certain point. So he doesn't want her to go with at a certain point because he hasn't figured out how to play the game that she doesn't die at the certain section where there's a helicopter involved. So they end up, you end up getting closer and closer to the end and figuring, okay, as it turns out, they're both probably going to die. Like, they have to realize that, yeah, they have to, in order to do this thing, they have to actually die. And there's one part where, you know, at the end, he actually loses his ability to do the repeat thing because he gets a transfusion. So then it's all for real. And so they go in and they kill the big bad guy while being chased by the second in charge bad guy. And there's fun vehicle scenes, blah, blah, blah. Yada yada, and some really fun stuff. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed this whole movie. Stem to stern. But at the end, he kills the big bad thing. And instead of dying, he flashes back to the very beginning of the movie. Like before, like the day before he's ever flashed back to before. Is that just a fairy tale moment? I mean, what under what, like how?
So there was the alpha that they were trying not to kill.
Yes.
And they killed the alpha right before they killed the omega. And while he was drowning, he was exposed to the alpha's blood, right?
Okay.
In the water. And that's the time travel mechanism. Is your question why he went back to the very beginning of the movie?
Yes.
Reasons. I mean, it's never really explained, even early on in the movie, why he went back to the beginning of that day or that moment. It's never addressed why it goes back to that exact moment.
Okay. And also, does this mean that he's going to now continue to live forever? Is he still stuck in a time travel loop?
Have to repeat shit if he dies?
Yeah, and how long does it last? I mean, if he doesn't, like...
if he dies in a week, is he going to go back to the day before he died? Or is he going to go back to the point where he was always going back to begin with?
And if it's in his blood, so can he just get a quick transfusion and go back to being normal again? If he kept some of his alpha blood, can he inject himself and make himself a superhero for a limited time? Is it a time thing? I know it's a time thing, but is it a time thing? I don't know. I guess you're right. Don't think too hard about it. Reasons.
Yeah. You're going to have to wait for Groundhog Day 3 of the Resurrection.
Yeah. It's, again, a lot of yada yada because this is just a fun movie. This is a movie I'm not going to put my thinking cap on to watch. I'm gonna get my popcorn out and sit back and have a fun time. Did I tell you about eating popcorn at work?
Wait, hold on. Before we get to that, is it time to acknowledge that maybe Doug Liman is just a really good maker of movies?
Doug Liman's our director here, and he is a director of...
Your favorite movie, Go.
Go is not a bad movie.
The Bourne Identity?
Hold on. Just in defense of Go, which is a Christmas movie, by the way. Go is a movie we watched this Christmas. And it was, for a long time, it was considered like the teeny bopper, low-rent version of Pulp Fiction. Because it's got a time element to it. But I think when we watch it this Christmas, we will be pleasantly surprised.
That's the movie that got him Bourne Identity, right?
I'm sure. It's a great movie.
He also did Swingers.
Go, The Bourne Identity, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, never seen it.
It's pretty fun.
Jumper, never seen it. Fair Game, have I seen that?
Is that the CIA movie?
Yes, Valerie Plame. No, I have not seen that. I Just Want My Pants Back. That's a TV series.
Oh, I thought it was an adult film.
No. American Made.
He's the announced director for Cannonball Run.
Yeah.
Gasp.
Oh, he's also the announced director for Live, Die, Repeat, and Repeat.
I can't wait.
Yeah, me either.
Are you kidding?
I'm not kidding.
It's the real sequel thing. Yep. To this.
That's hilarious.
It will never get made.
Oh, probably not. But I hope it will. That'd be great.
Why wouldn't it? This movie made a shit ton of money.
Did it? I thought it bombed.
I thought it bombed in America. Maybe
I think it made Let me look. I'm pretty sure it made a...
It's a good international movie, though, because it's easy to dub. Although, as it turns out, both Jason and I had a version of it that only had the French soundtrack.
It was a little difficult to watch, yeah.
I think it would have been fine.
Yeah. So,
budget of $178 million, worldwide gross $370 million.
Yeah, that works.
So, it made plenty of money.
I mean, it may be a dud for a Tom Cruise movie.
Also, $178 million, that's a, I mean, that's just wankery at that level of money.
As comedian Pete Holmes would say, that's a nice little chunk of change.
So it lost money domestically, right? It only did about $100 million?
$28 million.
Ooh. Okay.
Well, that was opening weekend.
Oh, okay. Still, yes. That's for almost $200 million movie, $20 million opening weekend is not what you want. Also, okay, this may have been one of those movies that blamed the tomato meter for fucking it. Because the way it works now is so many people, like Fandango, you know, one of the biggest ticket purchasing sites, has the tomato meter reading right on it. And people say that does not really do well. Because if a movie doesn't, like, underproduces, then it'll get more negative things on there, and then it's kind of a self-perpetuating downturn. Maybe it works the other way, too. I think Jurassic World kind of broke that mold, where it was kind of expected to bomb, but it did really well anyway. I don't know what I'm talking about, so let's move on.
It's fascinating, though.
So, anything else? Are you going to commentary, Drew, about the movie before we give our final verdict?
No, I thought it was really fun.
Yeah, me too. Brother Jay, your verdict?
I give this a solid B movie.
Okay. Brother Drew, was it worth it?
This movie is absolutely worth your time. It moves, it flies, it's under 2 hours. It's easily digestible. If it's ever on when you're like flipping channels, you can jump right in. It looks fantastic. I mean, I think, you know, it had a huge budget, and you can tell. I think the special effects were really great. There were a lot of practical effects, like you mentioned, Jason, you know, with the suits. And Emily Blunt was really a pleasant surprise. I mean, you kind of know what to get out of what you're going to get when you go see a Tom Cruise action movie. But Emily Blunt was fantastic. She was really mean. She looks great in the action scenes, but still had a lot of charisma. So that's everything you need.
So she reports that she would have started on the sequel last year, but she delayed the sequel due to Mary Poppins.
Oh. So do you think that sounds like it's really happening?
It sounds like it's happening because they have writers attached.
Well, I'm happy for it just for the title.
Yes, I agree.
They're working on the new script.
I had a great time. I want to see the sequel. This was fun. This is check your brain at the door, pick up some popcorn, have yourself a good old time.
And how wild is it that the Tom Cruise character, you know, at the beginning of the day, what was his name? Cage?
Yes.
Yeah.
Cage? So at the beginning of the day, he's this kind of like pansy officer who's never seen any battle and has no interest in seeing any frontline action. That's how he starts the day. But because of all the time loops, by the end of the day, he is essentially Jason Bourne.
Yeah.
So now he gets to live the rest of his life as a badass with like the worst case of PTSD ever.
And Emily Blunt is, I thought she was great. I mean, you can kind of stereotype her character as like a, you know, a Linda Hamilton Terminator type character, Terminator 2 type character. But the only like love scene, like kissing scene they have, like she improvised. That wasn't even in the script. She just thought it was seemed appropriate.
And that was a we're both going to die thing.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah, this was not, there was no romantic part of this movie.
Yeah.
Which is great. You don't need a romance. Fuck it.
Yeah, no, there was nothing, there's nothing soft about her character.
No.
No, she was a soldier.
And she explained it away, too, is that she doesn't have time for that because the last person she had feelings for, she watched die 300 times in a row. So, that kind of, you know, you end up swiping left a lot after that. If that's, I don't even know if that's a, I don't know what way people swipe. I'm not a swiping guy. Thank God. I hope I never have to swipe anything. So, are we on to housekeeping?
Housekeeping. Do we want to talk about cough drops?
Yes, I was gonna solicit that story. Can you tell me about cough drops? Because I love the story. To me, this is the perfect Brother Jay story.
Oh.
Now, every time I see a cough drop, I will think of my brother Jason.
So, anyway, I have some death cold that I'm now under the influence of whiskey and Sudafed to combat. But yesterday I actually called out sick because I couldn't get enough words out to talk to people. And so I figured I probably shouldn't be going to the office. So I went to Fred's and I bought some vitamin C drops, some sugar-free vitamin C drops and some sugar-free, basically fruit, sugar-free pectin drops so that they would soothe my throat without adding any calories or and without being menthol, because I hate the taste of menthol. So all those Halls, eucalyptus and menthol cough drops, I find vile. So, and for some reason, couldn't find sugar-free hard candy anymore because Fred's doesn't carry it seemingly. So I just went and bought like this package of vitamin C drops, which are assorted fruit flavor. And on the package, the picture shows grapefruit and lemon and orange. So I figured, you know, I'm not a hugely wild fan of grapefruit, but grapefruit, lemon, and orange, you know, I'll suck on some grapefruit candy and it'll be soothing. And citrus always gets extra saliva because it activates those your taste buds. So, you know, it's the salivary glands get going, all that. And so I pull a couple out and I eat a couple. And they're both grapefruit. And I think, oh, well, these aren't bad. These aren't. So I pull a couple more out and they're grapefruit. And I thought, okay. So then I dump the entire bag out and sort them by type. And then I line them up in comparison to see the proportion of lemon to orange to grapefruit.
And drumroll, the verdict.
In the bag, there were 2 orange, 5 lemon, and 20 grapefruit.
This sounds incredibly frustrating and extremely false advertising.
Yes. It's not really assorted fruits. It's really grapefruit with assorted other citrus. Anyway, that was the little bit of my crazy this morning. But the more crazy was the fact that I laid them out because I'm like, I was just getting angrier with each grapefruit when I was pulling out of the bag. It was like a bad bingo game. It's like, grapefruit, grapefruit. I was actually holding the little candies up to my monitor because I don't turn the lights on in my office, but I have 2 monitors and the monitor is bright. So I was holding the candy up like it was a film on an X-ray machine. Like, that one's grapefruit. That one's grapefruit.
You're trying to look at the grapefruit. Eggs to see if there's a chicken inside.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was doing.
It's called candling.
I'm sure the homeless people that were walking outside that sidewalk or clients that were walking outside the sidewalk thought I was a lunatic, but...
What's that happening? Oh, that's just Jason candling his lozenges.
So. Yeah, welcome to my world of crazy.
I love it.
You are not alone. I am here. We're all a little crazy, not in a creepy way. You are not alone.
It's funny. I told you we were having that training thing. Well, the last time he was up doing training, I got to go to one of the training classes for trainers. It was like a train the trainer sort of class. But then there was an extended one where they went down to Kenai to do like a 3-day class in Kenai. But I was too crazy to go. That was the height of my anxiety. But before I got actually like diagnosed, I think it was the winter before the spring of finally figuring out that A, I didn't have a brain tumor, and that I was just crazy and I needed to get on the goofy juice. Yeah, good times. So we all have certain levels of crazy. they just kind of manifest in different ways.
Have I told you about my pointy shoes?
No, please do.
Are you an elf?
So I've mentioned before, long time ago, I have some idiosyncrasies that that cause me some small levels of anxiety.
Can I be my brother Jay impression?
Uh-huh.
You don't say.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the examples I said on the podcast before related to the vending machine.
Yes, that's what I was thinking of.
And like not wanting to step on lines. Like not in like a super crazy Jack Nicholson and As Good As It Gets kind of way, but like I'm always thinking about it and it always bothers me. And I won't go out of my way, but I will change my gait in order to avoid stepping on lines. So I have a pattern, and like in my mind, I project lines coming off of walls. So like if there's a corner, I kind of like I see the lines, you know, extending from the walls, and I don't want to step on those lines.
Slow down. You avoid imaginary lines.
Yes.
Okay, that's all. Go ahead.
So like I will mentally extend like parking lot lines, the yellow stripes. I won't want to step over the extension. I know. I'm aware.
Okay, question for you. When let's say we have
this gets worse, by the way.
Okay, well let's say you have a corner and a line projects off the corner. Will the line stop at the wall, or will the line like continue up the wall? I mean, is it just like a one plane, or does it continue on a different axis at some point?
I imagine if I thought about it, it would go up the wall, but I don't.
What happens when you come to a parking lot where there's perpendicular spaces and the lines intersect? Because then they're both going both ways.
Is it Buddhism, or is it what religion? Where it must be Buddhism, where you have the million Buddhas that go outward, and then a million Buddhas come from there, and it continues on and on and on.
I don't want to think about that.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what kind of nightmare you're describing.
Anyway, there's a path I walk on at work. I do it a lot, so it's very comfortable for me. I know where to step. It's fine. My wife bought me some new work shoes because she thought my old shoes were getting a little ratty. These new work shoes don't have a flat toe. They have a pointy toe.
Like a cowboy boot sort of toe?
So a little bit. It's still like a loafer, but it's a pointy toe loafer instead of a flat loafer.
Yeah.
Which makes my feet a little... My footprint a little bit longer, it changes and fucks everything.
Yes.
And it doesn't impact my life. So, I mean, I'm not trying to portray myself as, you know, somebody who actually suffers from an affliction. But it annoys me and it makes me uncomfortable.
Are you trying to convince us, or are you trying to convince yourself that it does not impact your life? Because it impacts your life.
It doesn't. No, I mean, it's fine. If I have to step on a line, I'll step on a line. I just don't like it.
Yeah, okay. I get it. Jason, are you drawing lines?
No, I'm taking notes.
What? What? No, I don't take notes. Okay, about
there's
this.
It's a document called an ex parte request for evaluation. Involuntary.
Anyway, beep. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, this is a serious question, but it's also in the thrill of weirdness. So, does your wife know that the pointy shoes are throwing you off a little bit?
No.
Okay, and you could never tell her.
I could, and she would act like she cared, but I would know in my heart that she didn't really care.
So here's the bigger problem, though. Or she would buy more stuff just to fuck with you.
Would you avoid the pointy toe shoes?
No, I wear them.
Okay.
Yeah, but then she could find ways to be like, oh, I'm going to buy him this.
Again, I don't like having lots of shoes.
Are you against having lots of shoes, or you just don't like... Like, I don't have lots of shoes either, but it's not like I don't... Like, if I see too many shoes in the house, I don't get upset. And that laughter in my voice was not to mock you. It was just... I don't have a lot of shoes, because I'm kind of hard on shoes. I got big, wide feet. I'm a big, wide guy. So, my shoes take a pretty good beating. And I don't wear fancy clothes. I barely wear work clothes, because right now I can get away with polos and khakis and basketball shoes. Or... not really basketball shoes anymore. It's more like just like regular athletic shoes. If they're black, they're fine. But I have a couple of pairs of shoes, a couple of pairs of like work type shoes, and then usually a pair or two of like white colored sneakers or lighter colored sneakers for if I'm feeling like a day off. And I have a pair of hiking boots, and which kind of double as winter boots. And I think I have a pair of like rubber boots when I go down into the crawl space, which I will never do again. But I don't have a lot of shoes. So, I mean, I know if you were like a fashion guy, like, say, Brother Jay used to be, or maybe still is.
For shoes?
No, not for shoes. Just for, you know, like, I was thinking more like ties.
Ah.
Like you like yourself some ties back in your tie wearing days.
Yeah, I still have them.
Yeah. Do you still wear ties at work? No, you don't.
No. We don't wear anything that might allow the clients to reach out and strangle us.
That's why I'm only allowed to wear clip-on ties, yes.
Yeah, so that's why we have to have lanyards for our badges that are breakaway. So.
Yep. We are supposed to have that not so much to protect our throats, but so we don't get caught in the shredder.
We don't have shredders. We have big dump bins that then the big shredder truck comes and takes everything.
I was watching National Lampoon's Vacation, the original one.
Ooh, on purpose?
Yeah. Well, it was on TV while I was editing, so I was kind of keeping an eye out for it. And it was not good. Not surprising.
You don't say.
It doesn't hold up. Yeah, exactly. See? Oh, very nice. One of the things was Cousin Eddie gave Clark, Cousin Eddie is, you know, That crazy Bridges, right? Not Bridges. Is it Bridges? Yeah.
Randy Quaid?
Randy Quaid. The crazy Quaid. That's what I mean. Not Bridges. Bridges, Quaid, whatever. Dorf. Anyway, yeah. So Randy Quaid, his character, who is like a horrible stereotype of a sort of a loser rural guy, and his crazy family, who I forget. Was it Jane Krasinski? Is his daughter. But he gives Clark this pair of like patent leather shoes that have like kind of high heels and a flat front, you know? And Clark is like, oh my God, okay, but he has to be gracious about it. And he's like, oh yeah. He's like, oh, I got you a pair because you were wearing mine last. And he's like, oh yeah, okay, never do that again. And I'm looking at the Clark Griswold character who's wearing these stupid 70s or early 80s like glasses and a pink polo, thinking, you're turning up your nose at white patent leather shoes? You jackass? That's all. That's my shoe talk. What other thing I was going to tell you guys about? We talked about Hold the Dark, sort of.
Wait, you didn't miss Jason last episode, right?
No.
Is that what you meant?
What was last episode? Do we have like three left? I think we must have three. Okay, Ocean's 11 was last week. The Town was before. We haven't released The Town either. Okay, yeah. So after tonight.
No, you released The Town?
Oh, yeah, because it was like 45 minutes long.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Okay, yeah. Sorry about that. But we were missing your Mr. Hoover.
Mr. Hoover.
Have you seen The Town, Jason?
I haven't yet.
It's good.
It's on the list. Yeah, yeah.
Have you not listened to the episode because you haven't seen the movie?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, because there's not a lot of housekeeping in a 45-minute show.
No, I know, because I scrolled to the end of it looking for the housekeeping, and I was like, nope. Oh, skip it.
If you don't see a housekeeping label in the notes, there's no housekeeping.
Well, I just wanted to make sure, you know, mistakes happen.
They do.
I was hoping against hope.
Oh, you know what? Your mother and I watched Ocean's 8 on Monday.
Oh. How was it?
Yeah, how was it? That tells me all I need to know.
Well, no, I mean, I don't want to ruin it if we ever talk about it, but I guess maybe I will.
I understand.
I liked it as like a heist movie. It was fine, and it was nice to see all of the female actresses kind of get their turn to play in those roles. It actually takes place after like Ocean's 13 or whatever. Spoiler, Danny's dead, and she is Danny's sister, and she gets out of jail, and the first thing she does when she gets out of jail is she shoplifts a bunch of stuff and then goes and sneaks her way into a fancy hotel room. And to me, that did not make me like her character, Sandra Bullock character. Because if you're a con man and you steal from essentially bad guys, like big, you know, big rich guys who got their money because they're mobbed up, is more sympathetic as a Robin Hood kind of character than somebody that goes into a department store and steals expensive makeup.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, I don't like that. So that kind of turned me off a little bit. The rest of it was fine. And Awkwafina is hilarious, by the way.
If you're stealing baby formula, I have a little bit of sympathy. If you're stealing steak, I have no sympathy.
Yeah, it doesn't make me want to root for her character. Her character's just bad. That's not cool. Don't be bad. It's a public service announcement. As our first lady says, be best. So, so that's what I thought. Awkwafina is hilarious, though.
Good.
I almost want to see
Upgrade.
Crazy rich Asians just because she's in it.
Oh, all right.
So, anything housekeeping on your end of it?
I have something, but it's not for the pod. So.
Okay, that's why we had a 45-minute podcast last week, because Drew and I talked for quite a while longer, but I realized none of it was really for the pod. So,
but I did want to say congratulations to Father Anderson and a heartfelt thanks to Drew and Mom, who recorded video of Dad driving the Starliner from the backyard to the side of the house.
We haven't really talked about the Starliner on this program, have we?
We've mentioned it a little bit.
Now, Father Anderson owns a 1961 Ford Galaxy Starliner that he... But did he buy it new or did he buy it used when he was a teenager?
I think it was a present, wasn't it?
Well, the paint job was a present.
Yeah, the paint job was a present.
I guess we'll have to fill in those details. Father Anderson, if you're listening, leave a voicemail on... No.
He doesn't listen.
Yeah.
Does Mom even listen anymore?
Mom's a little behind. Yeah.
I think it's just Dougie.
I think so, maybe. Yeah.
Wake up, Dougie.
Nope. You know, Anthony knows that we do color commentary for Drew's Ice Machine.
Oh, yeah.
So we have listeners.
Right on.
And we appreciate all of them. So Father Anderson has had this 61 Starliner up on blocks in the backyard for a long time.
Since 1979.
And he is making arrangements to have it restored. Very complicated and expensive process this is, but it's his dream, so that's awesome. I mean, it's really a good example of like turning a hobby / dream into making it reality.
It's going to be an off-the-body restoration.
Which means?
They are taking it off the body.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like a complete teardown, restore, rebuild.
Is he going to put a CD player in it? A Bluetooth?
Oh, that'd be fun. I doubt it.
I doubt it.
Mom said something about how the reason I asked about colors.
He's putting an original steering wheel back in it, and he's putting an original shifter back in it. So I imagine that he will not be putting anything but a stock.
No, except he's putting a gigantic engine in it, though.
Yeah, but a gigantic engine that would have also been period.
Period, but not stock in this car.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is he could have bought the engine at the time sure. He had the car.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I suspect that there will be no upgrading of such equipment.
I don't know. It's like, is it going to be like a showpiece, or is it going to be a hobby piece? He's paying enough, I think, money, if I'm reading the tea leaves right, that there's it should be a showpiece when it's all done. Although I heard that he's going to paint it blue, some sort of period blue.
Maybe.
Not period blue. That would be more like period, like blackish red kind of thing. But no. So like I said, Mom, like, oh, like Gulf Oil blue, like the blue and orange, like the racing cars, like Le Mans. She's like
turquoise, like peacock, not peacock blue, more like aquamarine turquoise blue.
Yeah. The blue that was in that picture in the shared folder.
Yeah. That picture's not a great representation of the color, but pretty close to that.
What does his interior look like? Because I know he bought interior for it. What color is that? Because right now it used to be white, and then his parents painted it black as a surprise, which he always sort of
lamented.
Yeah, one of those things where you can't say disapproving things about a wonderful gift, a thoughtful gift. Except that if he had time to actually do all the body work he wanted to do on it before they got it painted, he would have been happier about it. And he probably wouldn't have picked black, right?
Right.
So,
I believe he explained to me a long time ago something to the effect of white cars were more expensive, yes, and the black cars were cheaper. So he was not happy that he had a white car and it was painted black. Because black cars, when they were all made by hand, were they painted the cars black that had all the fuck ups in it. Because it was harder to see them. Does that sound right, Jason?
It's actually the opposite's true.
Okay.
White cars hide damage. So if it's dented on a white car, you can't see it. If it's dented on a black car, it's obvious. So having a white car, which has lots of dents in it, they painted them white because you couldn't see the body damage. So that was what they would paint crappy cars off the line if they were damaged. So he had a white car, so it was all kinds of body issues. And then they painted it black over it, which then made all of the flaws in it immediately obvious.
Ah, okay.
Having a black car, I know all about every fucking flaw shows. So.
But would you want a white car?
Having owned two black cars now, my next car will not be black.
Yeah. Well, it's
weird. Every single tiny flaw that ever happens is immediately visible. So
I've never ever picked the color of a car I've owned.
Well, I didn't actually pick the color of this one either. It was just the one they had. So, but had I had a pick, it would not have been this color. It would have been any color but this. I would have even picked red. But it wasn't an option. So anyway, that was my understanding, was that white hides damage and black shows everything. So.
Well, if any car listeners, the car hobbyist listeners out there, if you know the answer to this riddle, send us the answer at carriddle@notinacreepyway.com.
You know who knows the answer?
Father Anderson.
Dad.
We should call him right now.
Probably not right now.
Okay.
Yeah, they're up at the cabin.
Oh, you're right.
We don't bother them up at the cabin.
Yeah, I know. Any other housekeeping, Jason? You said not for the pod.
I do have a story, but not for the pod.
Okay, and Drew?
I wanted to say I watched Jackie Brown before I listened to your guys' episode. I even talked to you about it a little bit, Eric, before.
Yeah, a little bit, yes.
You put out the episode. And I did not enjoy Jackie Brown. I did not think it was a fun time. But
I agree.
I really enjoyed.
Actually, I'm sorry. I don't agree. We had a great time watching it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed listening to your guys' episode, and it made me rethink what I thought about the movie. Because you, your perspective on it was interesting, and it was not how I was thinking of the movie. So I may revisit it with a fresh set of eyes. But it was a good episode.
So I mean, do tell. I mean, I know you didn't think Pam Grier was good.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, see, I think she was actually really good. But again, it's a different perspective.
Yeah, that's probably why I'm going to have to go back and rewatch it. Because you guys both thought she was good. And you guys both thought Robert Forster was good. And I thought he was supposed to be like really flat. And he did a good job at portraying that and even emoting through being like really kind of flat and understated. And yeah, I just didn't think Pam Grier really did a good job of migrating the different I guess the different personas she was supposed to have. Because she was supposed to be one way when she was with Ordell. She was supposed to be another way when she was with the cops, with Ray. And then a completely different way when she was with Max, right? She was sort of playing them all. That was the point of the movie.
Yeah. A little bit.
See, I took it more like she was just trying to keep everything very close to the vest.
She was trying to keep all the plates spinning.
Yeah, but without really, like, she wasn't like opening up and putting on an act. She was more like hiding her feelings, which I thought she did really well. Like at the end, that last scene where she's singing along in the car and stuff, and you see all of that. I guess she's not singing along in the car. He's singing along in the car, and she's in a separate car. But she's like, or maybe they're both. I don't know. Fucking.
No, he wasn't. She was driving away in the car.
She was driving away in the car. Yeah, and yeah. She was singing along with the song on the radio. And she's got all of those different emotions all at once. And it was like so great. I thought it was perfectly done.
Yeah. So what I would tell you is look at her. The reason that I thought she was so great is her body language, her posturing, and her facial expressions told you everything. She could have gotten away with almost no dialogue and you would have known almost exactly what she was doing. At least from what I observed. So that's why I thought she was great.
I think she was doing what Robert De Niro was trying to do in a better way.
I would most definitely agree with that.
Yeah, Robert De Niro just looked like he didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, he looked like he was on like downers. Like he was on sedatives, horse tranks. So.
Which, I mean, that's kind of a choice.
He was almost in another movie.
I don't know, I like Samuel Jackson being like really sticky in the first part of the movie, and every time he gets kind of pushed, you realize that that's mostly an act.
Yeah, that veneer comes right off.
Really dark. Which, anyway, I don't know. Again, you'll have to let us know what you think.
And the only other thing I had was a question. I talked to one of you about Song of the Sea, right?
Yes.
Jason?
But I have seen it.
You've seen Song of the Sea?
Mm-hmm. About the Selkies, the dual French-Irish production?
About how you were having angst over being the bad parent.
Yeah. Did you listen to that story, Eric?
Oh, what? Maybe not.
I don't think it ever made it into the podcast.
Oh.
Yeah, that might be a good one to throw into a later housekeeping if you have a short episode. But
remember which episode you guys were talking to about? Can I resurrect it? I mean, I have all the.
It was probably at the end of the ASMR, wasn't it? Because I think it's the only one where it's just been Drew and I. No.
No.
Yeah, it might have been.
Because no, I included pretty much everything of the ASMR one. Like, yeah, by the time you get like 2 hours and 45, you guys were pretty much done.
Yeah, I'll have to figure out what the other Drew Jason episode was.
Maybe it was because Eric wasn't feeling well. Maybe that was the end of Fast Five.
Could have been Dark Knight.
Maybe.
If it was Dark Knight, I didn't. Yeah, because I think. Yeah, that could have been. Yep, I think you're right. Because you went on for like another hour, almost.
Could have been. Okay. Yeah. You might mine that for some stuff because it had some pretty good stuff.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.